Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Podcast. Happy New Year, one and all. Happy New Year to you, Emma Sanders. Welcome.
Happy New Year, thank you. It's happy nice
New,
to be here.
Yeah, Happy New Year to Steve as well, who has just brought it with another wrestling t-shirt. Extraordinary.
keep on coming.
I'm a big fan of your wrestling t-shirts.
There's more to come.
I had a conversation, this about Mrs. put me to one side, basically, and said, I don't mind you wearing, like, you look all right, okay, in, like, sporty stuff, and I like you in smart stuff, but you're too old now to wear, like t-shirts with random things on, and that made me feel a little bit sad inside.
I mean, it's all about the Marvel t-shirts, really. So,
no, and I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. Just do it, mate. I mean, just do it.
No, but this is me. This is
again.
I'm the primary person in my life for a number of very important life things.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think
least of all, she does the accounts on the business.
But you have to see her more than I see mine, I suppose. But Claire buys me wrestling t-shirts, so
they're laughing at you. You're younger than me, though. You've also got.
I am a little bit younger than, and I think the fact that I look like a wrestler helps.
Yeah.
What's your wrestling name? Sorry, we're going a bit off.
We'd done the Taekwondo challenge. I was the bald eagle.
If you haven't seen that, by the way, do go and check that out on the YouTube. So, I miss us doing random fun stuff, so I was very jealous.
Yeah, COVID put a pay to that, didn't we? But yeah, we need to get back into doing stuff. So yeah, I got to play Taekwondo against the champion Taekwondo player. And yeah, I was the bald eagle. Ross was the Southport something.
Strangler.
I think that's a newspaper headline, but yeah. I mean, for those listening, I am wearing the Rock t-shirt, by the way.
I just bring a t-shirt on. I'm a big fan. Very big fan indeed. Excellent. Emma looks great as well, by the way. We've had a couple of these moments where Emma's looked for some sort of like support on things, and I've just been very, very complimentary to Steve. And that's probably why you shunned my agenda. That's probably what it is. Right, we are going to be talking Liverpool any moment now. We're going to be talking about the AFCON impact a little bit later on. Just get some general feelings about Liverpool's season, because there's been Blovers are in a bit of a mire at the moment. And what Red Men TV was basically created to be was a giant digital cuddle for anyone who needed it. Bearing in mind that we started on YouTube in 2010 when Roy Hodgson got the Liverpool job. And so when I say things like, it could be a lot worse, it doesn't mean it couldn't be better. It just literally means it could be a lot. It could be a lot worse. We've got a kickoff question from Kia Nolan. I believe it's a very old school Red Men fan as well, who probably remembers back in the day. Why do you think we keep seeing this running out of ideas thing toward the end of matches? Might be a simple answer of creative players missing, but interested to hear thought. My initial thought on reading this was that I think that's maybe a little overstated, but let's use Chelsea as an example of it. If Liverpool ran out of ideas, I think it was because in those last few minutes, we'd either taken the good lads off, or the good lads that were on were goosed, and or Chelsea also put a lot of men behind the ball in the last couple of minutes as well. But anyone got any thoughts, Emma, on it in general?
I think it's a mixture of a couple of things. I've said this before about Manchester City in particular. Like the season that Liverpool won the league, I felt that they'd kind of got a bit repetitive under Pep. And I think the style of play that they have was very like, it's all about sort of winding down teams, and it was all about sort of just completely suffocating them, dominating possession, and then eventually they were going to almost switch off. And if you keep doing the same thing over and over, so keep making those movements or keep, you know, sort of dropping in behind, then eventually a defender will make a mistake. And I do see that in, like, with a lot of teams, once they've spent a period of time under, you know, one particular manager and they've almost formed an identity of football and other teams have sort of got a bit used to it, it's almost like if you do that every single day, then I guess there are going to be drop-offs at some point in the ultimate elite level. So I think that will come into it a little bit. You've obviously got to take into the fact, you know, it's the heavy fixture schedule, which nowadays there's always going to be a drop-off in certain games with certain personnel as well.
I'm not even sure it's true. Like, we scored a 95th minute goal against Leicester, so we played Tottenham, didn't we, before we scored around the 70th minute, and then we had a lad sent off, which probably explains, again, why it was more difficult to do it.
I think the other stat came up during the game as well, that, like, last goals in the last, was it 15 minutes of matches or 10 minutes of matches, we were top along with Chelsea and Man City.
Yeah, I think it's a very short-term thing, because obviously the Leicester game where we couldn't break that down, and obviously Chelsea as well, but, like, 10 scores in the last one of the last kicks of the game against Newcastle, and that was only, what, less than a couple of weeks ago, and then obviously... Like I said, the reference to Spurs game, we get a late goal.
What was your watch going to tell you about that, by the way?
The date.
Okay, cool.
I've lost all sense of dates and times and stuff. I've got the date of that game was the 16th, yeah. And I was thinking, I was trying to do maths back from... It is the 4th, I think. It is?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's, I don't think it's that true. I think in the last couple of games, it's been a bit evident. But actually, against Leicester, we had a few chances. We did have chances against Leicester, we just didn't score them. Mm-hmm. Chelsea, it felt to me like we ran out of steam a little bit. And also, I think there's a conversation about the midfielders in general that I don't think any of them are playing particularly well in the last couple of games. Like, Milner's not been great, Henderson wasn't great, Keita when he came on against Leicester wasn't great, Oxlade-Chamberlain, not much since that game really against the...
Do you think that's sort of a bit of a problem in... And I don't think it's a big problem, but maybe just a slight one in that Klopp's system relies on the midfield almost... working well in every game. And if the midfield doesn't work well, then I would like to see Klopp be able to adapt to that. And I haven't really seen that as much this season as perhaps.
I feel, Paul, I don't know if you agree, I feel like there's an over reliance on Thiago, which is a terrible place to be in because his injury record isn't good enough to rely on him. I feel like when we used to rely, was it 14, 15, on we only score goals if Daniel Sturridge is playing and then Daniel Sturridge never plays.
I feel like
we're getting there with Thiago a little bit. Keita should be that. Like, he should be, if Thiago isn't playing, Keita should be a driving force. And to be fair to Keita, I think in the Leicester quarter-final game, he was excellent.
Yeah.
And if you have that Keita all the time, you will create chances. But we haven't got that, like, Fabinho is as good as he is at what he is. Henderson's not really creative, really. He's more opportunistic. I think we're, like, picking a cross out or a pass. Milner's not really going to do that for you again. He's similar to Henderson. You're too creative.
James Milner. Record assists in a single season in the Champions League.
But that one goal was that.
I know, it was a while ago. but my point is more that the idea that I'm nitpicking a point on the Milner stuff because I think people do that quite easily, and a lot of people did that this week. Of like, oh, Milner, like he is only this functional brute in midfield.
He can play, but he can't.
No, I agree on the Thiago point, and what I think it's worth expanding on because my immediate reaction was like, I actually think it's more. Because again, I think we have shifted the midfield. I think we've shifted it to the right side of the three is effectively the fourth attacker.
Yeah.
Which is what Harvey Elliott was doing at the start, and Jordan Henderson has been exceptional. I've seen a few people talking about his form to the point that the last couple of games the midfield has been, but I would look at extenuating circumstances and say Fabinho's been a bit crap as well. Fabinho was out.
I thought he was awful against Chelsea.
Yeah, he just couldn't live. He just couldn't live with the press.
And, he looked knackered.
And look, he was effectively locked in his house for a week instead of training for two massive football matches. Henderson was ill in the build up to that as well and pushed himself to play when maybe he should have been left. He should have left it for another week, but that's Jordan Henderson all over. Thiago stuff though, Steve. You're right in so much as we've got, our issue is there's no one I don't know who's our best left-sided midfielder beneath Thiago. We've tried Keita there and he's okay, but I still think he's a little suspect in leaving and things behind. And I think he's best on the right-hand side, or when the left-hand side's told, you can go and be the fourth attacker from that part of midfield. Oxlade-Chamberlain's not as good on that side as he is on the right-hand side. Henderson, we played him once there, not as good on the left-hand side. I don't want to get lost in there. We should have kept Gini Wijnaldum thing, but you know, we should have someone else who's
Gini Wijnaldum.
Yeah, but it's but Gini Wijnaldum's not as good as Thiago in what we need. Now need that midfield position to be, because he wasn't a creative midfielder.
Do you think, like, again, Curtis Jones could be an option there?
I was just thinking Curtis,
because he looks better from the left anyway. Yeah. He looks better cutting in on the left hand side, but again, there's times when he's playing where the balance doesn't always look right. Again, going back, he switches off a couple of times, like he just has brain farts where he just lets it run and go. But again, against Chelsea, I thought that happened on their second goal. It wasn't great, but yeah. I think there's an issue with the fact that, like, it's all right saying you've got 7-8 midfield options, but when one's always injured, which is Thiago's becoming pretty much now, Keita's not far away from that either, and obviously we're losing him now to the AFCON anyway. Oxlade-Chamberlain's actually been fit for a while. It just seems like they're really scared of him breaking, so they do wrap him in cotton wool a bit, which again is understandable. So then you're left.
I'm not even sure that's true. I think he's played a lot. He's played loads. He's like the 12th most minutes for Liverpool.
No, he is, but he's never. He's either first sub on or first sub off.
Yeah, he's, yeah, I can't remember like how many times he's like actually done a full 90.
He's on or off. Yeah, that's, so it's like Milner, Henderson, Fabinho. I don't think that's ever going to create much, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. I think there's a very functional field. I think there's merits to it, but I don't think it's going to create stuff. And the fact that, if you're playing Jota up front, I think you need to be more. Jota's not going to make as many goals as perhaps Firmino could. But
what I think the biggest issue is, and it's been exasperating the last couple of weeks, because this idea of Liverpool running out of ideas again is a bit of it's overstated, because we've been free scoring this season. We've scored goals for fun. It's just particularly.
We just scored two goals against the European champions.
At the wrong time of it's the wrong time of the season to be without Origi and Minamino. And I know the Minamino thing hasn't exactly set the world alight, but he's got a really good goals to minutes ratio for us, albeit largely in the cup so far. And same as Origi, they might not be good enough to be our starters, but they're certainly good enough against any tired defence with 15 minutes to go, and you just want to freshen something up. Divock Origi in particular, we see he's this season back to being, Wolves are great to have at West Ham as well when he comes in and scores in that one as well. He's got that contribution there, and when you're adding Ox and Jones to a front three, our goals all come from our forwards this season. Yeah. Our top six goal scorers are our six forward options. Yeah. And unfortunately, we had three of those options missing against
And I think
Chelsea,
in terms of creation as well, obviously we've spoken about, you know, the midfield, but actually what I thought Chelsea did really well was stop those balls from Virgil van Dijk. Like, he didn't have any time to, because that's what we've maybe done in the past, is we switched play by just sort of playing a bit more direct through van Dijk and switching it straight out wide and almost cutting out the midfield. He wasn't able to do that at all against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I think that was partly down to the fact that he probably had a bad game as well. But Chelsea were just pressing really high, and I don't think Liverpool have kind of come up against a team like that for a few weeks.
They stifled Van Dijk, they stifled Fabinho, they stifled Henderson, they stifled Trent.
Mm.
And if you can do that, then you're going to cause a team that needs those players, you know, a problem, certainly. Cut off the supply lines. We always talk about it. How do you stop teams? You don't stop the end product. You stop the supply lines.
Yeah.
Again, I wouldn't, to Keir's point, I don't think Keir's trying to stir up anything particularly in this. But I think it's going to be an interesting problem to face. It's one of the things we're going to be talking about later on in the podcast, is how we get through January and how we do deal with things. I think it's a little overstated, because we do this whenever Liverpool don't win a game, inevitably, and mercifully these have become less and less in the last couple of years, but it's always like Liverpool need a creative midfield, and it's like the stock response.
Yeah.
You know what, we haven't scored off a set piece. Costa Shimikas goes to the crowd and whips them all up, and then it's the first man off a corner, you know, things like that. Our set pieces weren't good. Like, we play against Leicester, who let more set piece goals in than anyone and didn't score one, didn't even have a chance off one. Like, that's fell down a little bit as well. And again, who knows the reason why that is? It shouldn't be, because you've got excellent crosses of balls and we've got fucking Virgil van Dijk. Like, there shouldn't be that.
Yeah, and the fatigue thing is massive at the moment. We've come through the most intense period of the season, and normally we're brilliant, but normally what happens is we struggle in January because we've put so much into December. The way it all sort of fell down in that last couple of weeks, and having that three away game run,
Tough games as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, 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 really tough in the league. But yeah, again, another daft one. We talked about this in the final word. And if you play Leeds, you're more tired because you've played more fixtures, and maybe we're even worse against Leicester. Who knows? Maybe that game's an absolute car crash and you get loads of injuries and all that kind of stuff. But Robbo's back for Chelsea, and I like Shimakasa. He's really good. I think he's probably technically a better footballer than Robertson, but he's got nothing like Robertson's engine. And again, you see that Robertson is, I don't think Robertson's set piece deliveries are as good as Shimakasa's, but he's fitter. So I don't think Andy Robertson plays quite the leggy corner that Shimakas does that you mentioned at that point, where he just looks like he wants to curl up and have a sleep.
In like simple things like the shithousery. Like he'll know when to just, you know, kill a game off.
I think the people don't score late goals, and that's overblown because we've scored late goals all season.
Yeah.
They've had two bad games. They have, and there's been a number of reasons for it. But we scored two goals against the European champions. We've got a very good defensive record.
It's not a bad game drawing 2-2 with Chelsea either, is it?
I'll be asking the other question is, how can you be 2-0 up again and not win? Because it's not the first time that's happened this season. Liverpool have been pegged back too many times. That's actually the bigger worry for me.
Yeah.
Like, is our game management better? Like, Kovacic's goal, but I know I don't want to go too much because this is what the final word, Joe, is on Red Men Plus. I understand that, but that can happen. You give a silly free kick away, that can happen. This guy scores a worldie. The second goal's a joke. And that's where I think, and you wouldn't expect it from a team that's got Milner and Henderson on the pitch, is like, be a bit more street smart. Like, how are we getting caught out? Let's just get to half time. There's a merit in just getting to half time.
Liverpool, the game continues. I think Liverpool are trying to kill the game while the crowd's up because Chelsea, it's all energy. I did a big bit on this, and the sequence of events that leads to the goal, there's about eight battles, and I think Liverpool win three, but Chelsea win five, and that's enough for them to end up in behind. But if Liverpool win one more of them, there's a chance, like if Salah just beats Rudiger to the ball and turns him, which he's more than capable of doing, Liverpool are in behind Chelsea, and we're the ones scoring. It's a mad set of circumstances. But again, to your point, Chelsea's not the point where, I don't think Chelsea's the one where you have to go, because they're a brilliant team who haven't just got back in the game with a worldie. The crowd are on top, they're buzzing, they just want it a bit more than Liverpool in that point for that 5-minute period.
They were almost surprised. I think Liverpool were surprised to be 2-0 up, because at no point did they have any control when they went 2-0 up, and it was almost like it actually probably only being 1-0 up might have been a bit better.
No, what you want there, I think you want someone to go down with just like a little poke in the eye, or like hold your face. Like a minute, or like and someone's calf goes Milner, or something.
Yeah. Milner tries immediately to be, you know, Tsimikas wins it on the left wing, and Milner immediately tries a through ball to Jota, whereas what he should do is like kick it off someone and get a throw and all. Find someone to, just hold possession and get to the floor. But everyone gets a bit swept up in it, which is why it was a great game, but it wasn't great game management. We're going to talk a little bit about, Liverpool's season and optimism and all that kind of stuff before diving into the AFCON stuff in a bit, but we're going to take a very short break. So we do the instant match reaction, which is normally about an hour after every single game. It was Chris and me after Chelsea. I thought this is a nice sort of segue into what we've just been talking about, what we're going to be talking about next. The response to it's been absolutely brilliant. It was Chris Pajak is, of the two of us, definitely the more glass half empty life view than I. So when he has a positive take on things, I think it's time that everyone should sort of sit back, put their feet up and listen, and hopefully take a little bit of heart from this. But yeah, have a little watch or listen to this clip from the instant match reaction. How do you crack on with something when there's no prize at the end of it? It's a mad challenge for Liverpool now,
because they're not fucking defeatists like us. Yeah. They won't believe. They know, as professional sports people, how easy it is to lose two games on the bounce.
Yeah.
And they'll believe that City will be able to do that, because someone will get 3 points off them. For a start, we're 8 points behind in their head because they've won their game in hand.
Yeah.
Right? And you beat City and you're 5 behind. You know, because we've still got them to play.
Yeah.
So they don't think of it like we do. They're taking it seriously, one game at a time. You've got to be there if they slip up.
Yeah.
That's what they've got to think about. You've just got to fucking hang around and make sure that you're relevant if they make a mistake. Because it's possible, Paul. And here's the other thing on the City stuff, mate. Yeah, they've changed the game. Yeah, they've got more money than us. So what? So what? So fucking whinging about it,
yeah.
And just let the lads fucking play footy,
yeah.
And fucking go on.
Oh god,
that's
yeah.
That's the league that we're in. Unfortunately,
yeah, exactly.
It's like if you've ever like I know lads who were really, really good fucking sprinters when we were young, but you take it to the national level and you're a fucking no one again.
Yeah.
But you might be a shitty champion. It's just the way that the fucking world is, and these guys have had it their entire career. It's just that they've been the best.
Yeah.
Their entire career, they've still got to go out there and strive that they can win other things because no. No one remembers City fucking winning the league when we won the European Cup. Least of all City, they were more pissed off that we won the European Cup than happy that we won the league. So go out and win the other fucking three trophies and shut them up.
Yeah.
Like, go out and do it that way around, you know what I mean? And if they do slip up, and they might, then fucking be there to capitalise on it.
Hey, welcome back. Yeah, we do the instant match reaction on Redmen Plus after every game, and you know, I think some people need a little bit of help sometimes. I've mentioned before, Redmen was created in some of the darkest times of modern Liverpool, and you know, we've managed to see it all the way through. So if you want more from us, do check out Redmen Plus. And yeah, for more from me and Chris on away games in particular. Yeah, I want to have a little chat about how we're feeling and all that. I did see a comment actually, which I normally try not to bite on it too much, but there's a comment from John O'Han who comments regularly. He says, sorry, Paul, relying on a 36-year-old James Milner for a club wanting to win the league is a bit embarrassing. I don't see how Liverpool are relying on James Milner, like, by the way. If James Milner was starting every game in the starting 11, if he was even remotely in our best 11, I would agree that that was the case. But it's called, this is just us having a squad more than anything else. I
36-year-old Fernandinho still plays for Man City, by the way, or however old he is. Like, you need players. Like, you can't have, like, I think sometimes, it's too off on this point, but like, I think Manchester City's squad depth is overplayed. I think the quality of their first like 17, 18 players is amazing.
Yeah.
But like, they won a league with Delph at left back. They've won leagues with Zinchenko at left back. It's like, they do plug gaps a bit as well.
Liverpool's first 11 and bench, I think that Liverpool consistently put out a better quality 9 substitutes when people are fit than Man City do, but I agree with that point.
Yeah.
And that's because 9 subs is a bit of a joke because you've always got you tend to have two kids on there. Their kids are a bunch of like very promising young kids. Obviously, you've got Cole Palmer or whatever coming through and people are quite excited about him, and there's a couple others as well. But like, our equivalent is like Nico Williams, who's a Welsh international, you know, and that's...
Yeah, but
you're right, I agree with that.
They get to bring Mahrez on, and we would bring Ox on, like, you know, you think, oh, whatever.
And moreover, they get to go, if someone, they can spend 50 million on someone, and if he's crap, they'll boot him and spend and lose money on him and spend another 50 million.
They've actually got the transfers recently really good. They've done really well. Like, I think that's the difference, is that Liverpool don't rely on James Milner. James Milner's playing because Fabinho's, you know, who else is going to play? Like, that is someone's got to play.
He's essentially like, what, 6th or 7th Thiago, midfield choice, isn't he? So
Thiago is injured, and then obviously Ox isn't deemed fit enough to go again or whatever.
The midfield today, I thought Milner had the best.
I thought he started really well. I thought he was our best player up until like 10, 15 minutes, and then it did all the shit, but it all went shit. I don't think Liverpool... I think it's unfair to say Liverpool shouldn't rely on James Milner. James Milner's a very good squad option, and like I say, it's just a case of that game didn't work. I agree. But the issue is, our two creative midfielders can't stay fit. Like, if the creative midfielders had James Milner's ability to stay fit, it's perfect. But the fact is, it's Thiago and Keita, and they can't. And, like, I go back to the Wijnaldum thing, is that he was never the most creative, but at worst case, he played 40, 50 games, and the other lads can rotate around him, and he can always rely upon him.
Yeah.
We haven't got anyone of that nature. We haven't got a lad. At the minute, it's actually Oxlade-Chamberlain, which is mental, who you can just put in every game and know you're going to get a 6-7 out of 10, and the other lads can rest and rotate around him. We haven't been able to do that.
Yeah. How are we feeling at the moment then, about the whole thing?
Look, I think I said at the start of the season I could see Liverpool winning the Champions League this season. I still believe that. I still think they've got the squad and the way the calendar is sort of like panned out. I still think the Champions League is absolutely on as it stands. Obviously, COVID can change anything. I think it was always going to be a difficult task winning the Premier League and the Champions League anyway. So I think if Liverpool, you know, kind of almost throw their eggs in one basket and go for that one, then I think that would be a very successful season.
Yeah.
But then obviously, you know, they're in the semi-final of a cup, and I would actually love to see them go for a domestic cup this season. I've spoken before on here, you know, I've made it quite obvious I'm not I would always prioritise a Premier League and Champions League over it, but actually by going for a cut, I think that will do some good to Liverpool's squad depth, because, you know, players that they might want to attract in the summer or next January maybe, if you are going to be the next James Milner that's a sixth or seventh option or a fourth or a fifth option, then by Liverpool sort of, you know, showing a bit more promise in the domestic cups, they might think, oh yeah, there's a bit more scope to play a few more games here. So, look, I think, as I said, the Premier League, they're going up against a Chelsea side who have got a very good manager. They've got, you know, a lot of resources. They've got a very deep squad. They've got a lot of, you know, they've got really good academies. So they've got a lot of loan players. And then obviously a City squad that's just, yeah, just got resources coming out their ears. Liverpool have kept up with them. And to, you know, to battle for them for Premier League title was always going to be difficult. Do I think the title's over? Probably yes.
Yeah.
Champions League, definitely on.
The thing for me on all this is I can't disassociate how brilliant Liverpool have been this season. And I know that there've been times where and you can point back, if we want to be hypercritical, we can go this and this. Liverpool lost two games in the league this season. It's the draws that have done us, absolutely. But this is still a season where, and this is why I'm really struggling to like gauge how I feel about it all. Because this is the season where we went to Old Trafford and absolutely demolished them. Less than a month ago, 2 weeks ago, I had one of my favourite ever Anfield nights with that League Cup game against Leicester. Like that's up there with Barcelona and Dortmund and all. And
just
like,
for fun.
Just for the experience, just for being there and what that felt like to experience that. You know, I'm seeing Mo Salah at a better rate than anything. Yeah. He's the best player Liverpool have ever had playing football in the flesh and doing it week in, week out and all those things. And I don't want to feel disappointed, because the title probably is beyond us, but at the moment it's not, and there's loads to play for. So I don't know. I feel like this is probably we're like a couple of wins away from it feeling like everything's fine again.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm starting to get the feeling that this might be the transition season where we learn like who can stay, who needs to go, and stuff. And maybe I get all the time they should have invested in the summer. I think they should have. They're probably one or two short. In fact, I know they are. They are one or two short. But I think if Klopp give them one extra year to know, if your transitional season ends up with you finishing second in the league, maybe winning a domestic cup, going well in the Champions League, it's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. I think like the scope for Liverpool to rebuild around most of what they've got. If they have to let three or four go and bring three or four in, whether the owners do that, they should. And if they don't, they'll rightly get criticised again. If your transitional season is finishing second and winning a cup, and like I said, that's fine. Yeah. I think the City juggernaut at the moment, I just don't know what we could have done. I just don't know at the moment what they would have had to win every game, because that's Man City have won 11, is it now, or 12 or something on the bounce, and like they're winning more games this calendar year than I think anyone's ever done. It's absurd what they're doing, and I get it. Liverpool are better than last season, I think. The year before they're not better, obviously. No, that was a high bar they've set. I think we're starting to find out now that there's a bit of a refresh needed, but it's not like the overhaul of overhauls, like. Because we've added one or two bits in, there's, like for example, this should be James Milner's last season. It should, and there should be a midfielder boss in the summer who goes straight into the team, and everyone goes down a peg. That's what this should be. Yeah, yeah. And if it becomes that, I think it's easier to swallow.
Well, everyone, mate, here. Just a little insert from me to say that if you enjoy this podcast and the other podcast that we put out for free, and you want more, then my word, you can have more on the RedmenTV.com. Go over there, sign up, and get extra bonus shows from us each and every week, as well as a whole suite of video content, documentaries, features, and interviews. But yes, you can also play those podcasts in your native podcasting app as well, to have a seamless Red Men TV experience in your ears. TheRedMenTV.com. Sign up there today.
Okay, Sam, we've had some super chats in while I've been doing this. Jacoby says, will we replace Genie when Naby gets injured in AFCON? Oh, great. Akash Shriv, at this point, I would take any signing. Squad is so stale right now. If we want to challenge City, we need to add quality players who can be robust. I feel like...
He's contradicted himself.
Contradicted himself wildly in that super chat there.
Any signing, but it's got to be quality.
Yeah.
And robust.
And robust.
If we remember what any signing looks like... We only have to around the clock 12 months and look at what
Ozan Kabak, go and sign the striker Ozan Kabak from dog shit.
And Ben Davies, by the way. Yeah.
Fucking dog shit.
I actually forgot about Ben Davies.
Yeah.
Ozan Kabak.
Bless him. Seems like a nice guy.
He had a good song, though.
Yeah.
I think I was speaking to Jag the other day out of Anfield, and he said, like, one of the worst things that ever happened to him was that Old Anchor Back turned out to be crap. Because the song was amazing.
The song was a belter. Yeah. I get this, you know, we were saying this. Look, I need to cover this because I don't know what we have and haven't said because we had a slight technical hitch in the middle of the show. I just want to get that, be up front, get that out the way. You could spend whatever you want on players and still not compete with Manchester City this season. You know, so yeah, I wouldn't get too lost. I certainly wouldn't take any signing, and I think the idea that the squad is stale, I think, is a little bit. I agree.
I think again, I don't know if I'm repeating myself or not, but like, I think there's scope to saying, right, we'll get someone in January, and even if he just is a bit part player until next season, and it makes the summer easier in that you've already filled one of the gaps.
Yeah, and Jürgen said this, hasn't he? If it's someone that you were going to buy in the summer anyway, and you feel you can get him in January, great.
Yeah.
But again, it boils down to that issue.
I wouldn't be making desperation signings. Ozan Kabak and Ben Davies were desperation signings because we had no one left and we were desperate to get top four. And ultimately we did. It just happened to be without those really doing much about it.
Yeah.
We just relied on other guys instead. I think if you said to us, like, I don't think we need to be in that position where we're just panic buying now, but like I say, if the right opportunity comes along, they should. Mm-hmm. And if it means, like,
I think they need to at least be trying.
Yeah.
That is the very least, is that they have to be. There has to be a plan. If there's not a plan, then I'd be concerned.
If you've got your list of summer targets, and whether it's Mike Edwards or his new mate who's replacing him, Julian Ward. Thanks for the. I was completely blanked on his name. You've done me a big favour. If you've got your summer list, if you're not making calls now and saying, is there any chance for January instead, then you're not doing your job. The flip side is it's harder to get them out of January because, say, for example, say it's Jared Bowen, if it is him, or say it's Rafinha, who we're airing links with as well. Why are West Ham and Leeds letting them go now?
Yeah.
You'd have to, like, it's just not going to happen. So that's
and the, then you get back to, well, just pay extra money to make it happen. And that's, I mean, and again, in this, so you're in this endless loop of arguments about Liverpool investments and the money being spent and all those kind of things when... Yeah, if you spend an extra £20 million, it's £20 million. You've not got in the summer to spend on something else that you might need. It's all very well managed and handled. Again, we don't know. We're not privy to all the insides and outs. I think Liverpool probably really should do what they need for me. And it doesn't get spoken about enough because we get so lost in this. We need goals. We need goals. We need goals. I think we've got plenty of goals in the front six positions. If you can upgrade Minamino, laughing, go and do that. Absolutely, because he's, you're right. He and you've said this before at some point. If he's your Mane understudy, he's not. He's not Mane's understudy. And if he's your centre forward understudy, he's not. He's not Firmino's understudy. I don't quite know what kind of footballer he is. He's quite predatory in the box. I quite like that. He's quite calm in those situations, but I don't think he's enough at that the top level. So if you can improve him, great. It's Fabinho for me because I've seen it was actually another super chat from Joe Anger saying we should have kept Wijnaldum. He would have added the depth we need right now in midfield and add structure and steel to any midfield he's in.
Yes,
but also
he did offer him a contract though. Maybe it wasn't a great contract, but he did that. It wasn't just waved him out the door.
He's another 30-odd-year-old footballer, and your point you've made at some point is about you've got to refresh the squad. Somebody had to start being moved out.
The flip side on that is, mate, I agree, but he replaced him with a 30-year-old fella. With Thiago.
Didn't get any real value.
They've replaced him with a 30-year-old on the midfielder. And also, the idea is more minutes for Curtis Jones and more minutes for Harvey Elliott.
Which is fine.
Is what they've done in reality. And moreover, you've brought Thiago's skill set into the AXA training centre for a load of people to learn off. You've learned everything you're learning from Gini Wijnaldum, and that's where that's what the trade-off has been.
The availability,
but it's Fabinho for me because we are our best team has to have Fabinho in it.
Yeah.
And we can get by. Henderson can do an admirable job at the six and a very, I'm being disrespectful, a brilliant job as a number six. But if we also, it's like your Jota argument you've made of, if he's Mane and Firmino's understudy, that's what Henderson's problem is that Henderson is the Fabinho cover. But we also know his best position is the right side of a midfield three. You need someone else who can do more of what Fabinho can do, but you know you need another Henderson.
I mean, ideally,
that's Gini Wijnaldum, by the way.
Yeah, but it's not because you've got to. These guys have got to go at some point.
You have to move it on. Yeah, I mean, like ideally for me, it's James Milner's last year. And then I would probably look, like, I think as sad as it is, I would look to try and get some money out of Oxlade-Chamberlain now. And I would move him on. And then that's two midfielders out. You can bring in someone else who's maybe got the leadership and the experience of Milner, but you know, is a bit more consistent.
I got no problem with Oxlade-Chamberlain. If you can get money for him, sound. But in terms of the minutes, when he's fit, again, title-winning season and this season already, he's your 12th, he's your extra man. He plays in a bunch of positions. He's good. And when he's playing like he has been this last couple of months, I've got no problem with him sticking around. He, for me, is like Divock Origi. You can chuck him into any football match as your 11th. You know, you make one change, two changes and put him in and you see no drop-off of quality. Where we've done ourselves in is Naby Keita and Takumi Minamino, those slots in the squad could really do with being game changers. And Keita is that.
But he's not good enough, and that's exactly it. That's why, like, for me, it's a case of probably two of the Keita, Ox and Milner need to go. And I think you're going to get more value out of Ox maybe now because he's fitter. In terms of like the drop off, obviously Keita costs more money, so you have to factor that in from a business point of view as well. It makes more sense to stick with Keita longer because you invested more in him.
And Ox is homegrown as well, which helps.
Yeah, and Keita in terms of like his roof is maybe a little bit higher than Ox as well. So yeah, so if it's two out of the three, then that's why it's Ox for me.
What it might allow you to do, by the way, is stop over relying on Jordan Henderson, which we do now. Yeah. He hasn't played well for a couple of weeks either. I think he's run into the ground. I think he's knackered.
Yeah, he's knackered.
Like, he was ill, and then I think he's suffering from being overplayed. But he hasn't played well. So if Jordan Henderson is then a rotational player, if not so much the James Milner of your squad, because he'd get more minutes than that, but if he's more the Ox of your squad and he's in and out and you can play him when you need him, you might be better there. I think the issue that might compound all this is that AFCON happening now means we can't just sign someone and then hope to sell Taki Minamino, because you can't sell Taki Minamino to raise the funds or to make the space. It's almost like you've got to do it and then hope you can get rid of someone. And that's a difficult one, because he's going to have to play. He's going to play a lot if he's fit. So that's where it's being compounded by. Yeah. Again, I think we're all pretty certain, given how Jürgen spoke about Divock Origi five times, that he was there if anyone wanted him. If someone wants Origi, you can have him. And I'd like to think that he would have maybe had someone lined up to bring in and play someone, but he couldn't get him out the team. And I've heard people say, like, you just let them rot on the bench. That's not going to happen. You can't do that. That's impossible. So it's like that. I think that's compounding. That's going to make January difficult, isn't that? Can you, like, for example, I think that Phillips will leave either on loan or they'll sell him, and they won't replace him, really. Mm-hmm. I think they'll just be happy with the fact that if they need a fifth choice centre half, they might have to give Reece Williams a call or something. I don't know, maybe because you can't, that's fine.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You can't do that with Minamino now, because he has to play. Mm-hmm. He's playing games, he's going to be playing lots of games.
I guess on the flip side, like, and you're absolutely, I completely agree with the AFCON situation, but on the flip side, if you were to bring someone in January as the kind of Minamino type replacement, then at least they're kind of maybe guaranteed a couple of games in January. So you can almost say to them, like, yeah, like, show us. And I guess it gives them a bit of an opportunity.
But I mean, like, actually, in terms of the space in the squad, you've got to take a space off somebody. You can only register X amount of players. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. You try bringing them in, but you just say to Minamino, right, you're not in the squad now?
I think, I believe I'm right in saying that we've got Karius registered. So you could, you know, and I think he will just move on somewhere in January, theoretically. So you might be able to squeeze something out of that. But moreover, what Jürgen doesn't want is anyone in that squad who feels like they've got no hope and no opportunities and no chance, because that's how Liverpool have managed to construct what they constructed. This is not Mourinho, who treats people like arseholes and hopes that that'll somehow light a fire in the belly and they'll come together, and that's why everything he does is short-lived, you know, very short life cycles. Liverpool have constructed, their way of doing it is to create a unity amongst that squad that has everyone pulling together. You can't just be like, oh, sorry, Taki. I mean, there is maybe a point where you can tease something up, and maybe you go, we'll do another loan out for someone if needs be, potentially. So you know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
the flip side again is there a loan you can get with a view to buy? There's all things you can do. Again, we just don't know who the targets are, because if the targets are who we think they are, and it's Rafinha and it's Bowen, that's almost impossible. And then you might have to wait till the summer. And I agree. I'd actually agree with that. You don't want to panic and miss out on those, like,
because and the off point made, you buy someone else in who's not, if they're not better than
Minamino.
Well, no, actually, moreover, if they're not better than Jota and they're not better than Firmino and they're not better than Mane, you're buying another lad who might, they might be better than Minamino and Origi, but they don't understand how we play. So you're buying someone else in to effectively replace Origi and Minamino, but what we'll never know is what you might be gaining in theoretical ability, you're losing in you know, yeah, again, unity, understanding, you know, grip on what we're trying to do. So you might actually net be buying, yes, it'll benefit you next season, but we're talking about benefiting us now. What you're buying doesn't benefit us for the time we need to be benefited for. Joe Pike, 1 point for us and Chelsea is good for the games we both have against City. Both teams have to go for the win. If one lost, they may have rotated.
I think what he's saying is basically, like, the fact that we didn't beat Chelsea means that Chelsea might give more of a go against City.
Okay,
which makes sense, but like, yeah, we'd rather beat Chelsea.
Okay, cool. Right, we're going to take another very short break. We've got a fantastic competition running over on Redmen Plus. Some details to follow, and then we're going to talk about the AFCON impact. Hey everyone, we've got a fantastic competition prize for you this month, and it is this, an incredibly limited edition signed Jordan Henderson print, framed, beautiful, celebrating his 10 years at Liverpool Football Club. There are 25 of these in the entire world, and we are offering one up if you are a subscriber at Club Legend tier on Redmen Plus. If you go over to the RedmenTV.com, sign up as a Club Legend, not only do you gain access to our incredible suite of Liverpool streaming content, from documentaries, features, interviews, and pre- and post-match content, you are automatically entered into our draw to win this, which we'll be streaming live at the end of the month. So get involved. January's prize is this incredible, unique piece of Liverpool history, and you can have it in your house to hang on your wall if you join as a Club Legend subscriber on Redmen Plus. Yes, if you become a subscriber to Redmen Plus at the Club Legend tier, not only do you get access to our Discord group full of wonderful, lovely individuals and all the content, of course, but yeah, you enter into a monthly competition. We gave away over £1,000 worth of prizes over the festive period to our Club Legends, and yeah, we've got a boss prize each and every month as well. We've picked next month as well, haven't we? Did we go with this signed, it's a signed shirt, isn't it? Did we go with the white one?
We think so, yeah.
The white crown paint one, which is signed by
Ronnie Whelan and Steve McMahon.
Yeah, framed.
My new BFFs.
Yeah. Steve did a live show with them at Hotel Anfield at the weekend. Right, sound, AFCON. Ugh. we've got Arsenal coming up. We've got Shrewsbury. I think the fact that maybe the league being a little bit out of our reach potentially, I think it does add more to this Arsenal thing. The only issue we've really got here, Em, is no Salah, no Mane, no Keita.
Who the hell is playing up front?
Yeah, and look, ultimately we saw this at the back end of Chelsea, take the chat all the way back to the start of the podcast. Yeah. Who is that? We don't know about Origi, we don't know about Minamino. All we've been gearing up for all season is, what are these lads are going to play? Are they going to be good enough? And here we are in January, and they're both injured.
And Bobby's got COVID.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I think Ox came on, didn't he, in the front three against Chelsea at the end, and I wasn't surprised because I think it has to be probably him and maybe Curtis Jones and Jota, obviously, through the middle.
I'll take that.
I don't see who else plays in that front three. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, there's a bit of a problem in midfield because you then probably have to play, well, it'd be Fabinho, Henderson and either Keita or Milner. Obviously, like, preferably you play Naby, but
he's in Africa.
The thing. So it's like it's Milner, isn't it? And then
it's crazy.
Unless
he goes for Tyler Morton again, because he's played him a lot in this.
Maybe.
My point is, like, I think the focus needs to change on this game now. I think Jürgen needs to pick whatever his best team is. Like, I don't care about rest, rotation. If you're fit enough to play, you play, because I actually want to win this cup.
Yeah. And look, and to be fair, in terms of the fixtures looming, Shrewsbury at the weekend, so you're going to play whoever, anyone you want to play. You don't really care. If you play a team of kids, put a couple of decent lads on there if you need to. We beat them 2 years ago with the team. You know, the best players we had in that team were like Harvey Elliott and Kurt Jones, and we managed to beat them.
I do think this Arsenal side, they're in a really good moment, and I do think this is probably the best possible time that they could play Liverpool, because Arsenal, I think personally, are looking really good at the moment.
Yeah.
But it is going to be a tough game.
I think it fell weirdly kindly for us, because look, let's be honest, if they weren't, we didn't have those fixtures, we'd been beaten by Leicester, we'd have a nice little run to make sure everyone's fit, get them some rest and all that kind of stuff. But these will just be, I think these will just be treated as first team games.
Yep. Oh yeah,
because we've got no choice.
Remember,
and why not? We're 2 games away from a final.
Yeah. The Southampton semi-final, what, we got beaten. He played good teams in both of them. Yeah. So he will.
So just again, we just had a quick flash up there on the video podcast, but I'll talk you through it for audio listeners. Obviously, Arsenal on Thursday away, Shrewsbury at home on the Sunday. Arsenal then, the second leg is the following Thursday the 13th, then it's Brentford at home on the Sunday, then we go a week on then to Crystal Palace, but there is a chance that the Leeds game will be slotted in between Brentford and Palace. That's the thinking at the moment, so there'll be one more midweek game, albeit a home one, before we head into February. We've got international break after that. The fourth round of the FA Cup would be the first week in February. I think that's the 4th of February that's being sort of penciled in for. And then Leicester on the 10th. Now, just in terms of how that lines up with the African Cup of Nations, so all the first sort of rounds are all being played up until the 20th. Then the round of 16 is on the 23rd of January. So if the lads get that far, then it doesn't kind of matter. They wouldn't be missing anything extra, because we're not playing any games around that time, you know, the back week in January anyway. Yeah. It's only if they then get to the semi-finals, that's when it starts to
win. Miss the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Tie.
Yeah. So if Mane, Salah and Keita get to the semis, which is scheduled to be played on the 2nd and 3rd of February, that would miss the fourth round FA Cup definitely. And then the final is on the 6th. Of Feb. So there's
Leicester's 10th, isn't it?
With Leicester being the 10th, there is a chance.
He would fly them back and they would be
flying back on
it's
the
just
night. Yeah.
COVID quarantine, isn't it?
They'd be getting hooked away from the trophy celebration and bundled with a bag over their heads onto some sort of private supersonic jet.
But the good thing is, all three of the players can't play in the final. So
there's a fair place playoff though, Em.
So gosh,
Liverpool's luck would be that Egypt, Senegal final, and Guinea in the fair place playoff. We lose all three of them, but I think the fact that it's happened around cup games has helped a bit.
I was going to say, like, if they do get to the semi-finals, then if there was any game in the calendar that I'd be thinking, oh, I'm quite happy for them to miss, it's an FA Cup fourth round.
Depends on the draw though, because if you draw. If we've all held our hands, we said we think the league's unlikely. The FA Cup takes more priority, maybe. If you get Man United away,
sure, but I'd still prioritise the EFL Cup semi-final and the Champions
League. I take your point.
I'll level with you though, Steve. Yeah. If we get Man United away, I don't get what's your point? We need a good team to beat them.
Then. Man United's a bad example, isn't it? Okay, if you get Chelsea away.
We had this, didn't we? The league winning season is that we got Chelsea in the sixth round or the fifth round at that point. Yeah. We were like, okay, we'll have a decent run of this FA Cup malarkey, and then we got knocked out by Chelsea. So no, I agree. But
it isn't mad that it's out of our control. Man United at Old Trafford is like imprinted in my mind as being like this tough old game,
and the fucking dog shit. They're awful, absolutely awful. I think there's a bunch of teams. But that's the point about the squad and stuff. We'll put the strongest team out there. Certainly, they've got
to
go
out for Arsenal. Absolutely have to put the strongest.
I saw some comments online again. I ain't referencing too much, but I'm going to mention them now. It was like, yeah, well, we've lost Mane and Salah, now all of a sudden we're going to have to play Jones and Ox up front. I was like, yeah, because there are three injuries as well. Well, there's a lad with COVID and two injuries. Like, if you lose five attackers, it's not going to be good. Your number six, seven and eight attackers are probably going to be a bit shit. Yeah. The fact that Jota's one of them helps, because he's probably number three.
Yeah.
But then you're playing three, seven and eight, whoever they are. Like, it's going to be bad.
And you haven't even included Harvey Elliott in that interview list probably, as well. And he would have played probably the right-hand side of the front three.
He'd be above Taki Minamino, wouldn't he, in the pecking order for sure. Well, he was, so you'd think so. Yeah, so that's what's happened, is that unfortunately AFCON's, these two lads who we've been banking on to be fit have got injured at the worst possible time. Yeah. Like, I heard that Minamino's close to return anyway. Jürgen referenced him before Chelsea, and maybe just didn't risk him knowing what was about to come.
Well, I think that's what we saw.
Arigella saw him 4 weeks ago.
No one knows what's happening with Arigella. I'll ask Neil Jones about that on Transfer Insight this afternoon. But it's Yeah, it is what it is. I think that's what impacted our substitution, particularly Jota, because it seems a bit crazy taking Jota off against Chelsea to put Oxlade-Chamberlain on.
But he's more likely to score a goal.
He's more likely to score a goal for you.
But like you say, it made sense.
Because Jota's now our only recognised forwards, definitely available.
When did Bobby test positive? Was it the Thursday, we think?
He'll definitely miss Arsenal. So the Klopp stuff came out on the Saturday. That stuff came out on the Friday for the press conference.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah. So at the earliest, he can come out Friday if he has two negatives, which rules him out of the Thursday game and probably rules him out of the Sunday game.
Yeah, he's definitely out of Arsenal and there's probably a high chance that...
He could put him on the bench.
But like, even if he comes out, he's not had any training for over a week. He's been ill as well. Yeah. So it's like, really? Yeah. Like, he's not going to be at a level to play a professional game of football the next day.
If he can train Saturday and he's on the bench for Shrewsbury, maybe just to get half an hour into him. With a view on him then being available for Arsenal. Because the risk is then he hasn't played footy for 10 days. Yeah. And then you're throwing him into Arsenal. You might just say to him, listen, with all due respect to Shrewsbury, go and have a little half an hour around, running around Shrewsbury.
There's a big circle, I think, in the calendar around that second leg Arsenal game. And I think the idea being a bit, if you imagine that more like first half and second half against the Leicester in the quarterfinals, where we're probably weaker than we would like to be and probably too weak to win, necessarily comfortably win the game in the way we would like to on Thursday. But if you can make sure that you've got the best possible team available for that second leg at Anfield, then that's what we'll try and make it a one game competition if we can.
The flip side is, mate, like you cannot bank on anything because it's not only injuries and tiredness and fatigue. The COVID thing is like at any point you can lose three.
Well, exactly. Origi, Minamino come back and to fitness and immediately contract COVID and then get ruled out for another week.
I'm going to throw a proper spanner in the works. What about changing formation and going with a back five? Because we've got a lot of centre backs fit.
I tell you what, we'll keep that over because we've got to do the build up show for that game. Yeah, we'll put a pin in that one. Keep that one to one
like
side.
Pep Linders going, the manager's not here. Let me change someone. I can do whatever I want.
Why not?
In terms of the fit, the only thing I have a little concern about is that I see a lot of people going, it's only Brentford and Palace, and I agree. But also,
I'm potentially Leeds.
Which is fine. I mean, if you've got a cherry pick, three fixes. Brentford obviously gave us a hell of a game, but hopefully they're just feeling the
Palace
effects.
Palace have got AFCON players, haven't they?
Palace, I think, have hit a little bit of a wall.
And they've got players going to AFCON themselves.
Yeah, Palace will be hit.
I always hate that talk of like, oh, it's only X, Y,
it was only Brighton, wasn't it? Exactly. Until it was 2-0.
The thing about this and about January for me is, life's a shit house and it is what it is. You know, there's no amount of, you know, what we'd all want to change the situation. We'd all like to have an impact on it. We're going to have who's available and there's nothing we can do to change that. Liverpool have got to find a way to get through this month. We've got the best men in the world to mastermind that. It's whether we've got the talent on the pitch able to do it is the big question, because it's the Premier League and anyone can beat anyone on with the right headwind. But we might find, you know, I've said this a couple of times this season, in really intense, mad, back against the wall situation, Liverpool have this weird way of finding new heroes.
We're going to find Kay Gordon's going to score a goal.
I'm going to throw a prediction out here that Kay Gordon will not play a single minute for us in January, because he's this season's Billy Cometio. Last season when we were going about our centre back issue, well, don't worry, because we've got the kid, Billy Cometio, he's being primed
this
to start to come involved.
Yeah.
He play 5 minutes away at Midgetland or something like that, and he's not seen. I mean, hopefully.
We have seen Cade Gordon this season, to be fair.
We have once.
Yeah, then he got injured.
But
he would have played against Preston if it wasn't. I think Harvey Blair, who I didn't know who he was, I'll be honest, with all due respect to the lad.
Okay, Gordon was injured for that one, wasn't he? But he's not eligible for the Champions League.
I think there's a chance we see him. I wouldn't be shocked if he starts one of the Palace or Brentford game. You know, I wouldn't be absolutely depending on Origi and Minamino's fitness.
Yeah.
If they're ruled out, I wouldn't be shocked if he said, if you're going to pick someone somewhere, can you stick someone on the right wing?
Well, does Klopp go with the notion of that he learned in the centre-back thing?
Just pick another one.
Just play a lad who actually plays in that position, who's younger and maybe worse than playing a better, more senior footballer out of position.
I wouldn't be surprised to see like Nico Williams play a bit more like over this period.
Right wing.
Jesus.
I mean, not necessarily right wing. I mean, like, he could do.
Probably.
But that's the point. More so just to rotate Trent a little bit.
But that's the thing about it, is Kate Gordon could have started against Leicester. We could have played Nico Williams right back and started Kate Gordon right wing, and we started Nico Williams and Conor Bradley instead.
Yeah.
So that's my point. Kate Gordon, I cannot wait to see him flourish. I hope he does.
He's 16.
But I've got this sneaky feeling that he's a child and he's built like one as well. And, you know, we might not see quite as much of him as we hope. Just lastly on the league thing, you know, at the moment, Liverpool are 11 points behind Man City. And I said this elsewhere, but the league title, I think any sensible person right now is probably going, let's just park any talk of us winning the league. If Liverpool leave January and we finally get to play that game in hand and it's back down to 8 points, that's still probably too much. But that's the aim. The aim this January is to prove that 11 points is not the real gap. Is to get it down to what it should be, and it should be 8, because we should have been able to beat Leeds United. Should have.
And then you have to win the game against City.
Yeah, and then see, and then it's February,
then, exactly.
And look at February and see what happens in February.
I think what you need to do is, we don't think it's going to happen, but if they collapse for whatever reason, listen, in any year of all years, this is the season where it could happen.
Yeah.
Because their squad's so good, they could get 6 COVID cases and the Premier League still make them play, because they're like, well, the team you can put out has still got 14 internationals on it. So
we
need to be there in case they do slip. I don't think they will. I think they're too good. But what would be absolutely criminal is if they did and we weren't there and it was Chelsea who pipped us. We were like, what has happened there?
Man City, just for the sake of talking it through, they've got Swindon in the FA Cup third round, whatever. They play Chelsea on the 15th of January. They play Southampton away on the 22nd of January. So obviously they haven't got the League Cup, so they've got less fixtures. But also, we always have this weird thing where we think less fixtures benefits you, and it definitely does in some regards. But they're always in that League Cup. They've never not been in that League Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting new thing about them. It was like, it should benefit them, because there's no way in theory that them having less football shouldn't make them fitter and stronger and more likely to win football matches. But it's one of those weird unknowns under the Pep Guardiola City side. But you know, it's not outside the realms of possibility that City beat them. Chelsea beat them. You know, I think at the moment. No, but it's not outside the realms of possibility, Steve. That's why I phrased it that way.
Jesus Christ.
I did not say Chelsea will beat Manchester City. Exactly. I said it's not outside the realms of possibility.
And it all comes down to, like, you know, what we kind of referred to earlier, if it was in the show, about essentially everything having to go perfectly for Liverpool. And that's what has to happen, is that City has to have some kind of collapse. That probably means Chelsea beating City, Liverpool beating City, and Liverpool winning their game in hand, and then basically Liverpool just being perfection until the end of the season. That's pretty much the only way that Liverpool are going to win the league.
Yeah.
But it's City, not, just like being, you say, human, it's not
would be
a start. Just draw a game. Stop getting, like, they don't need VAR help. Stop it, like, maybe turn VAR off in City
Manchester
games.
Manchester City, just a note on this, Manchester City have lost more games of football than Liverpool this season.
Yeah.
So just the draws have killed us.
Yeah. But that's my point, is that they are playing at a ridiculous level, and again, it's cup games and it's Champions League and all that kind of stuff, and you can go and pick it out, but I'm just stating a fact. Man City are beatable.
Yeah.
They just don't drop points very often. So it might happen is what I'm saying. And all of a sudden, because it's a flight of fancy, and why not? Is you might get to the end of January, and instead of the gap being 8 points, it's 5 points, and City have gone psychologically from having an 11-point gap or 10-point gap over Chelsea to having a 4-point gap or a 5-point gap, you know, depending on how things go. And that feels like they've collapsed, because that's exactly what happened to us in 2018, 2019. We went from having a 10 point to a 7 point,
drew West Ham to a 3 point,
and it felt like Liverpool had bottled it. Yeah. When City just had a little bit of it, what it just wasn't done and dusted yet. But we'll see.
And they had some games in hand.
The flip side again is, like, you look at, like, they've got 17 games left. Like, if they win all 17 of them, absolute well played. You're one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah.
Enjoy your league title. You very much deserve it. If that the it's never happened before. So in terms of, yeah. Obviously they went on winning runs, but not from that early, not from like October. If they win every game, there's nothing we can do. All the best, well done to you guys. The point, like I think we're saying, is like, if they do slip up, and mathematically they should, unless they're a major outlier, just make sure it does. Make sure it's us who's there to be the ones who push them. And that come April, if they have done it, and then the pressure's on them because, oh my God, you were 10 points clear and now it's 1 point and Liverpool could beat you and go above you or whatever. That's what Liverpool need to do. The worry is, my thinking of saying that, why I think it's always, because I don't think we're ready to do that.
Liverpool will drop. Our world relies on Liverpool also putting down a freakish run of.
We have to win like 15 games.
And that's my point, is that you're daft if you're hinging your life happiness on this mad set of circumstances. It's like saying, I'm going to kill myself unless I win the lottery. You know what I mean? Like, just don't do that. Just find something else happy in your life to keep you going. Like, that's what you need to be. We need to be very careful with all this. What I'm saying is, because I live in hope.
Don't give up.
No,
Salah's t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Never give up. That February's interesting for City. They've got the Champions League back on the 15th of February. Like, you know, they play Sport and Lisbon, which they should comfortably walk, but it's the Champions League and it's Man City, who knows. They then got Tottenham at home, they then got Everton away, and they've got United at home before they play the second leg of Sporting, and then they travel to Selhurst Park, and Crystal Palace are a team that can give them can give them a bloody nose as well. So again, footy's mad, footy's wild.
It's unlikely, but let's just wait and see.
Let's just enjoy the ride. Right, thank you. That has been the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to Emma Sanders.
Thank you
so much to Steve Hoare, and thank you so much to you guys at home, whether you're watching or whether you're listening to this as well. And don't forget, we've got you covered, loads of additional content over on Red Men Plus. I'll be doing a Geno Insight all the way through the January transfer window, talking to Goal.com's Neil Jones. We're going to be doing some really interesting stuff, talking about Erling Haaland, talking about what he thinks may or may not happen this month, some COVID updates. And we're going to be taking your questions as well from our Club Legend Discord chat. Hope to see it over there. And if not, have a boss week. Check us out for the build-up show and for the watch-along with Arsenal. Ta-ra.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.